Hello and welcome to episode 15 for Across the Isle. The prodigal host returneth, me, Carla Donnelly, and I'm joined by my muse, Philip Teal.
You're back. That makes me the running dad.
The running dad.
Let me enfold you in a Rembrandt-style embrace.
Wonderful. In today's episode, we will be discussing Lilith the Jungle Girl by Sisters Grimm at the Melbourne Theatre Company and our possible sponsored show Two Dogs by Meng Jinghui, presented by the Melbourne International Arts Festival. Our trip to Two Dogs was selected by Julian Lair as a possible reward. Thank you, Julian. Julian Lair is the CEO of the Marco Polo Project, a bilingual website highlighting contemporary Chinese writing. We'll also be catching up on the last 3 months over intermission and coordinating for coming soon. It's the tail end of festival season, so it's time to cherry pick for our waning energies. I'm keen to hear what you want to check out, Philip. But up first, it's your pick, Lilith the Jungle Girl.
Lilith. Yeah, I thought it was important for us to see Lilith because our very first episode way back when was about the Neon Festival run by the Melbourne Theatre Company and hosting a number of independent theatre companies in a kind of contained festival of weird new theatre. This is the Melbourne Theatre Company's new direction when it comes to this kind of thing called Neon Next. And so we got to see something that the Melbourne Theatre Company would not ordinarily program within the Melbourne Theatre Company season.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because it was in the Lawler.
Yes.
And it also makes a lot of sense for the extremely confused boomers that were sitting around me trying to, and I couldn't figure out why this was programmed this way. So thank you for that.
And interestingly, I was there on opening night and there was a sense from that opening night audience of independent artists and their friends that we had made it, girl. We were here. We were queer. We were going to Borneo together. And the tone of the show was a kind of high, farce, queer cabaret, and with a sort of post-colonial series of twists. In the program note, we hear that when a young wild girl is captured in the rainforests of Borneo, all of Holland is set abuzz. The year is 1861, and pioneering neuroscientist Charles Penworth, played by the immaculate Candy Bowers, is called upon to raise the child from the pit of her animal nature. But as Lilith learns to tame her feral heart and live amongst the glitterati of colonial Amsterdam, she begins to wonder who indeed is the real savage. So the gender bending continues. Lilith is played by the equally fabulous Ash Flanders, who is revealed in a box covered in goo and completely naked.
Indeed.
The way that I experienced this show was as sheer entertainment via political commentary, and the moments that were most satisfying were when those two things were exactly simultaneous. So there'd be some perfect quotation of colonial language taken radically out of context that somehow made for pitch-perfect theatrical comedy. And from the very moment that Candy Bowers started using language like poppycock and flim-flam, I was just kind of quirkily entranced by the whole thing. The set was spectacularly simple, and there were lots of little jokes about what was, in fact, quite arbitrary staging, including that sort of pink paint that didn't have to be there. And yet, since it was, it became a series of jokes about slipping and sliding on the goo, the reveal or non-reveal of the penis of Lilith. And then as well, there was this curtain that would circulate around the centre of the stage. And in my favourite scene, the curtain moving machine had somehow slowed down.
Yes.
So that
tick,
as
tick,
we listened
tick
to the song Kiss Me, we had to sort of start the track again. Oh, it was just a wonderful performance and truly, truly quirky throughout.
Wow. So I feel like from your exuberance that you were quite thrilled with this. And I think like opening night would have been, because I didn't get to make opening night. So I feel like we probably experienced it with very different crowds.
Oh, it was a fabulous crowd. And as soon as there were moments of sort of arch camp symbolic grandeur, like when Lilith is dressed up to be properly Dutch, but the way they do it is to make her into a sort of giant coat of arms of the Netherlands with a spinning windmill attached to her back. I mean, how can you not just sort of bathe in the warm water of such a pleasure.
Yeah, I went to almost pretty much the last show due to my travel schedule. I wanted to love this, but I didn't quite get there. I've been sort of ruminating about it for a long time, thinking, you know, is this their sort of style been downplayed for a more mainstream MTC audience, or sort of bringing it more to a main stage MTC? I'm not sure.
You mean Sisters Grimm, the company?
Sisters Grimm, correct. So, and also it sort of felt like a kind of, this sort of sounds derogatory, but like a greatest hits of their political agenda. I don't want to say agenda, that's a terrible word, but political fascination, obsession. But I don't think it's sort of that glib. I think it was definitely a refinement of a lot of the topics that they have conversed on previously. They're obsessed with colonization, which is completely fair. It's a stain on our culture, and it is the primary place that, you know, we all come from, and where all of our politics spring from, and the very reason why these white people are allowed to create this play on this stage today. So I think framing it in this sort of more Rudyard Kipling, Jungle Book meets Frankenstein narrative was a much cleverer way of doing the whole sort of paternalistic science race thing of men.
Because it was a bit distanced?
Yeah, yes. So it was clever in the way that, you know, it was Dutch. You know, you got that kind of Dutchness. It was set in Holland and, you know, you had this kind of Western or European pompous mentality on top of it. But, you know, the Dutch aren't really, you know, any of the primary colonizers of the past, you know, 500 years.
Or at least not of where we are. However, there was a moment when they sort of emphasised New Holland.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, wink, wink.
But you're right. I mean, there's a question, isn't there, when you're dealing with politics that should be local and should be relevant to a contemporary audience. The question is, how much do you let the audience feel the comfort of distance and alienation from the scenario, even dressing Australian colonisers as totally camp, over-the-top, elaborate Captain Cook-wigged types allows us to go, oh, of course, if we were dressed like that, we'd take the wig off and everything would just be fine.
Okay, yes.
Right? And Candy Bowers also lets us in a little bit because, you know, she's not a white colonising person. So her in that role allows us to, again, be a bit more playful and relaxed and backslappy. Having said all of that, surely that's a strategy of luring people in, tempting them to come along so that you can actually deliver the ironic but effective slap on the face that hopefully resonates with the target audience.
I'm not sure if it was successful in that, to be perfectly honest. I think this was a bit of a shaggy dog of a production for me. I really like the set, but every single element of this production had something off for me. So Candy Bowers, who is also a woman of colour for the people who do not know her or have not seen the production, and she was playing a male white scientist, 18th century scientist, and then you have Genevieve Giffre, who is the, you know, female scientist constantly being degraded and talked over and belittled by the male scientist. But a lot of these relationships and these settings just kind of had something that was missing for me. And the sort of 90s child elements in there, that the boomers around me were just, they just were looking around wondering why everyone was laughing so much. I feel like it kind of straddled this fence of both worlds, but it wasn't successful in communicating to either. Like, it should have either been this complete farce, 90s farce, or over the top like The Sovereign Wife. I really wish you'd seen that, because The Sovereign Wife was extraordinary. Or, you know, just 90s rave kids, you know, totally hitting it for their audience.
And yet, let's think about this sort of in-betweenness that I think you've rightly identified, the sort of shade of grey rather than black or white approach that they took, perhaps even sort of symbolised by this ambiguous paint that just sort of covered and disguised everything on the stage. A memorable scene for me was when Lilith, who is a lion, goes and visits the lions in the zoo, having decided to return to the jungle, return to her lion identity. And there, Candy Bowers has kind of re-costumed herself as a fabulous boombox-wielding lion of the zoo.
Yeah. Streets, urban lion.
And Lilith has this awful experience of being rejected by her own kind as some kind of sellout. Now, I worked at Immigration Museum, and many of the exhibits that were mounted there about stories of migration would explore this phenomenon that is, I don't know, perhaps archetypally Melburnian or Australian, of people feeling neither nor, between two categories. And for queer artists like Sisters Grimm to identify that as a terrain of interesting oddness and betweenness, I think makes sense at some level. And so kind of being neither nor, both and, having somebody who is a person of colour being like an arch camp expression of whiteness and maleness, while, you know, the only white man on the stage is actually playing a person of another species. I mean, like, the queerness is so multi-layered that it becomes potentially the only way that these questions can be authentically explored. And I think that's what they were shooting for, with everything sort of being between categories.
I accept that reading, and I feel like that was very much that was coming through. But I don't know, maybe it's just the performance I saw, but I kind of feel like both sides left a little bit bewildered or a little bit not fulfilled.
And I can see how that is the risk of sure. A company like this. The risk is that you shoot for the middle and land there with neither sort of political side or ethnic or cultural or generational side being satisfied.
Do you think, I sort of had this idea as well, especially with the, when she goes to the zoo to meet the urban lions of, you know, sort of cultural self-determination as a grotesquerie as well. I found that really fascinating because I have a Maltese heritage, and it's something that you've talked about just then. It's very true. Like, a lot of the WOG culture here is frozen in time in the 50s, but they're holding from when they immigrated, but they're holding on to these ideals as that's what it is. But then you go to Malta, you go to Italy, you go to Greece, and they're modern countries just like us. You go, you know, I'd never forget the first time I met a Maltese person who was my age, and I was just blown away. It was like going into the future.
And so where do you see that reflected in the production?
The whole zoo thing. So, you know, she is straddling this line, Lilith, of being a appropriated sort of cultural curiosity and not fitting in anywhere in this modern world now. And maybe that is a displacement that almost everybody has and everybody's feeling, I'm not sure.
Well, in any case, I think that the character of Lilith by the end of the play was sort of offered to us as a potential way to think about those questions and a potential sort of figurehead for individuals who do identify as, you know, falling between two stools.
There were so many stool sight gags in the play. So I think bravo, Philip.
The kind of the theatre craft lesson of this production is, if in doubt, just strew everything with colour.
I loved that metaphor of, you know, really, you know, once they get Lilith out of the crate, she's in a massive pool of pink mud, but the mud never went away. It was kind of this afterbirth colonisation metaphor for the stain that it just, you know, obliterates onto everything.
Nobody is clean.
Yes.
And everyone is fabulous.
I did have a good time. And certainly after being away for almost 4 months, it was probably the most Australian experience I could have had straight off the plane. Yes. So thank you very much.
Welcome home.
It's intermission. I need several wines and some... What are they selling at the MTC these days? They're really fancy, from the chocolate place in South Yarra.
Really?
Yeah, those chocolate-covered almonds.
Oh,
give me some of those.
Good.
Yeah.
I was at a Music of Viva chamber music concert recently, the Jerusalem String Quartet. Fantastic show. And the person introducing the performance and telling people to turn off their phones also said, "Unwrap your throat lozenges."
Oh, my God. Stop. That is so good.
And was applauded, like, aggressively by, you know, boomers who no doubt, you know, were the people who were not of the throat lozenge tribe. Delicious.
Oh my God. That's why I had to stop going to Monday Nova during the day. It was just constant rustle, 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 rustle. I'm like, this is not worth saving $6.
Yep. But look, I'm so keen to hear about the United States of America.
The US of A. Yes.
East Coast, West Coast.
Seattle. Or Sealish, as I found out, is actually its name.
It's weird.
It is one of the only three cities in the US that has a Native American name.
Right.
But it's, of course, it was Sealish, but they changed it to Seattle because no one could pronounce Sealish, apparently. But close. Pacific Northwest is amazing.
Are they...
I had a great time.
Theatrical, operatic?
It is very like Melbourne there. It's bizarre. In fact, it's much more chilled out than Melbourne. People are almost to the point of like lobotomized. They're so relaxed. It's pretty crazy.
To go back to Lilith for a moment with a lobotomized character.
It's kind of like Tasmania.
Oh, nice.
If Tasmania had Melbourne as its capital city. So you've got all this like crazy, amazing nature.
Hinterlands.
And you've got this awesome, urban, phenomenal art city. It's pretty perfect, to be honest.
What'd you see?
Well, I didn't see anything in Seattle. I took the opportunity to really take a break from seeing shows and all that kind of stuff. But I did go to New York, and I'll say two things of note. I went and saw the exhibition of The Ballad of Sexual Dependency by Nan Golden. Mm-hmm. It's a photographic exhibition that I've had the coffee table book for quite some time. But it's on at MoMA at the moment, and I never knew that it was actually a slideshow of photos set to music. Nan Golden lived in New York from the, you know, mid-70s. I think she still lives there now. And just, you know, took really beautiful photos of these underground queer, you know, freaks. Mm. People, you know, very sort of on the edge of society.
On the docks.
I guess. Just beautiful, sexual, rude, amazing pictures. And seeing the entire slideshow was religious. And then I saw Alison Bechdel's musical Fun Home.
Hey, cool. I'm jealous.
Oh my God, tears.
How wonderful.
So many tears. It was really incredible, and it was everything that you want out of a Broadway musical. It was flawless. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What about you? What have you been doing?
Well, we've had Fringe.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I had a few nights out at North Melbourne. Just because when you go to the Fringe Club or the Fringe Hub at Arts House, inevitably you see something that makes you want to see the rest of that thing. So I went to the opening night gala performance, which was hosted by Sammy Shah. And then I'm like, right, I've got to see his show because he's a hilarious host who keeps telling us to see shows. Then I go to, you know, a night with Andy Snelling's show, Deja Vu, Fabulous Physical Theatre, followed by A Prudent Man by Lab Kelpie.
How was that? I love Lyle.
Yeah. Well, that,
shout
that,
out
yes,
to Lyle.
Yes, yes. Just a remarkable monologue.
Oh, really?
Just brutal.
Yeah.
Okay. About conservative politics.
Amazing.
Like a glimpse into how a person that you don't understand politically might join the dots in his own head to be the monster at your Christmas dinner. Really effective.
Fascinating.
Anyway, the only reason I was seeing shows on that night was Immaculate.
Stephen Nicolazzo's
in
show.
Celebration of Madonna. Like it was like a big Madonna thing with Little Ones Theatre sort of overseeing and curating it. Anyway. The moral of the story is Tessa Waters was hosting that. And so I thought, she's amazing. Never seen her before, but now I need to see her show. So that's how Fringe worked for me. So my mental note to myself next year is just go to the opening night without any tickets, keeping your calendar free.
Follow the breadcrumbs.
Follow the crumbs.
Yeah.
Hansel and Gretel style.
That is awesome.
And yeah, it was so successful as a space, that North Melbourne environment. And like the later you were there, the higher the kicks.
Sure.
And apart from that, I was at the Czech and Slovak Film Festival, run by Cerise Howard, local
Cerise.
Legend.
Yeah.
And just a wonderful balancing act between remarkable masterpieces from the past and quite edgy, kind of often scary contemporary film from Czech and Slovak.
So my gut opinion of that is that it'd be sort of really hard going. Was it hard going?
Yeah. Okay. Hard going, but
like, I was hoping to be made wrong.
So the most beautiful image of any of the films I saw was of wolves in the snow.
Wow.
Right. So that seems to be the symbolic image that I've settled with for cinema from these countries, which is, you know, about harshness, coldness, fierceness, but beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Great.
So I can't wait for the fifth festival next year.
I'm jealous. Mm. I'm jealous. But I did have another summer, so I'm ridiculously brown right now.
Like migrating birds.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
And I'm ready for it to happen here now. Come on, Melbourne.
But what about Trump?
Oh, well, interestingly enough, because I was working there in an office, it's very not okay to talk about politics or religion in the office that I was in. I'm not sure if that's every office, but it was like very not okay. And then in terms of my friends that were there, they were just kind of ignoring the whole thing.
Gross.
As you would. But I tried to sort of bring it up with a few people and they just were dismissive because they're just like, I'm sick of it. Mm. It's been going on for 2 years. I don't want to hear about
it
anymore.
Even at the best of times, a presidential election in the States is stupidly marathon.
It's so crazy long. I don't care, you know.
Gross.
And there was governor elections in the state that I was in. Oh, but I will say one thing, legal weed.
Woo!
Washington State has legal marijuana.
That's so comic.
And you can just go to a shop. You just like show them ID. You go to the shop and they've just got edibles and flour and all the accoutrement. Right. But then the hilarious thing is that most people in the service industry are extremely stoned. So it's really difficult to like get your order right you know, and then they're just so stoned and smiling at you. And I'm like, I wanted this one. And they're like, okay.
A McMuffin?
It's hilarious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a laugh.
What a bizarre summer. Anyway, good to see you.
Yeah. Oh, China.
Oh, we got to go.
Who are these Chinese people?
I know.
Everywhere. Oh, my God. I love it.
Ding, ding, ding. All right. So our second show is Two Dogs. As we've mentioned, Julian Lair has sent us along. And the little blurb for Meng Jinghui's play says, two country canines hit the road for the big smoke, but when they fall into a metropolitan miasma of reality TV, Viagra, SARS and Louis Vuitton knockoffs, they begin to realize a dog's life isn't what it used to be. So as Philip just mentioned in intermission, it was quite extraordinary to see so many Asian people at the Malt House, which is, you know,
totally
a comment on a comment on a comment. But so that was wonderful. And so many young people as well, which I thought was really great.
The fashion was on point.
Oh my God, stop.
The bags.
Yeah, and the hair.
Everything.
Yeah, okay. So I knew nothing about this play. I know nothing about Meng Jinghui, apart that he is obviously of some eminence from China. And he was actually out here last year directing a show for the Malt House called The Good Szechuan.
Oh, right. Same person.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that was part of an exchange because Marion Potts, the old director, went to China to direct a play. So that's really the basics of what I knew. And then I read the program today because it was rather unfortunate, I think, for us that about 25% of the performance was in subtitled Mandarin.
Oh, no, there was a subtitle. It said in capital letters, actors improvising. Or even better when it said, mocking the audience.
Yeah. So I had that kind of transfer from Lilith of me being the boomer in a play, not understanding what is going on
and following along.
Literally not getting it. Yeah. So it was nice to kind of supplant that information. So I didn't even know where to start with this play. It was a production of different elements that you wouldn't, in my Western mind, don't expect to be put together on stage. There was a band for no apparent reason.
With amazing hair.
Oh, metal, Chinese metal guys with really long hair.
Yes.
There was like a spray painted kind of urban backdrop and the two performers were in urban contemporary clothes.
Well, I assumed from the beginning, just because I didn't get it, that this must be somehow traditional, that there must be genre things going on that were cueing other people in the audience to know roughly what was happening. And indeed, the next day, I was at a picnic and there were people there who had seen the show the night before, which itself was interesting. These Mandarin-speaking young, cool kids were there and were happy to have been there, and there's a bit of buzz about it. They're talking about it on WeChat, right? So the Melbourne Festival has been effectively targeting the community of Mandarin speakers in Melbourne to get along. They got along and they knew roughly what to expect. Now, they told me that crosstalk, that's the direct translation of the genre, is a thing where there's two people being funny together, one older, one younger, sort of in a master-student sort of relationship, that all of that stuff about sort of clapping and cheering, little gestures and moments of comedy are to be expected when you go to a show like this, but that ultimately what we saw is what it is, just sort of a dorky series of physical comedy where improvisation is at the heart of the art form and nothing is really very serious. They, like I, didn't really follow the narrative.
And
they were able to understand the words. So even though lots of what I experienced as sort of confusion, I was putting down to language gaps, they also experienced a version of, because, well, essentially the narrative was just something happens, they read a letter, then something else happens, and then they read a letter again. It was really deliberately jumping all over the place.
Right.
As these two dogs moved through experiences either of wealth or poverty, of freedom or incarceration, basically providing new environments to set up little comic antics between themselves.
Okay, so sort of as a jumping off point for improvisation.
Yeah, and even those settings seemed pretty archetypal. So there was a prison scene with prison comedy. And there was like a town mouse, country mouse sort of, I live with a rich owner now, says one of the dogs. And so they can mock the rich kind of thing.
Right, okay.
Mm.
So sort of like a tasting plane of all sort of contemporary social issues. And
yes, yes. And it actually, I thought of Don Quixote, the novel, as I was watching it, that sort of picaresque style of linear experiences of kind of two clown-like characters seeing what happens and responding to whatever happens as they go along their journey of life.
Yeah, okay.
So they're definitely archetypal characters.
Sure.
And according to my Chinese-speaking friends, again, so this was not my insight, but they suggested that the younger performer didn't quite get the genre as well as the old guy did.
So
he kept bringing little moments of just totally on-point improvisation that the other guy, and I loved this, would respond to by laughing authentically. I thought, I actually enjoyed that feature of him
too.
Losing it over and over again at the comedy antics of this older performer. But I think what is more correct in this style of crosstalk performance is for both performers to be schooled in the tradition and to be able to sort of keep up that characterization and improvisation without just sort of guffawing as our performers are. The two performers are Liu Xiaoye and Han Pengyi. I'm not sure which one is which.
No, and I was just looking at my notes trying to think that as well.
Hmm. So sorry for calling them young guy and old guy, but we'll just stick with that.
Or more experience.
Yes. Little and big. Big brother, little brother.
But the younger performer was obviously some kind of like babe magnet, young person draw card.
A legend.
Oh, because he was so gorgeous and talented.
Oh my God, one of the scenes was him just flicking his hair.
And all the girls around me were just like screaming.
Gagging.
Like it was a K-pop concert.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It was such a bizarre, no, I wouldn't want to say bizarre, it was such a different cultural experience for me. I don't have a lot of Mandarin-speaking people in my life, but I have to say, once I got home, I'm doing this whole, you know, automatic sifting and sorting of cultural experiences and what does Australian make Australia and all that kind of stuff. And I have to say, the first thing that I felt like when I'm like, oh, I'm home, was I went and got a massage and I was just hearing all of the staff giggling and talking to each other in Mandarin. And that was the first time that I thought, oh, I'm home. Mm. I'm really home. Mm. So it was an extraordinary experience for me. And also to have that real fish out of water experience as well and see all these young people and how they reacted, particularly in terms of, you know, Melbourneian audiences are so staid and reserved. And this was like a party.
Yeah. Oh, from the beginning.
I've never experienced anything like it.
And they seem to all know what to do.
Right.
I mean, I was laughing at moments that were funny, but what I didn't realise is that you were meant to laugh and clap.
Right.
Or at the beginning, you know, when Melburnian audiences other than this one arrive late, everyone sort of awkwardly moves their knees to the side. Here, they put the house lights up and started mocking the latecomers.
Yeah, I love that.
And everyone was also sort of up for that too.
It seems to me, because I think, like, you know, there'd be a cultural stereotype that Chinese people are, like, very, you know, severe or quiet. And to be in this experience was amazing.
That is such an interesting observation. That's so true. That the migrants to Australia, who were the majority of the audience, in their 20s and 30s, I reckon, actually, based on how our culture operates, would behave in a reserved way more often than not in public space type environments, but it's actually not their culture. It's right. Definitely not their entertainment culture, as right. we witnessed, as we experienced. When they're, you know, hosting each other and eating together or going to crosstalk shows together, it's just loose and loud. And actually, I found it ultimately relaxing too. So this is a comment about the highbrow or not quality of the show. Now, I reckon that this was pretty easygoing for the audience. It was sort of at the level of daytime TV or a kind of user-friendly comedy festival show.
Yeah.
It was relaxing and easy to follow. The harshest thing that could happen is, you know, they take your bag as part of a sight gag and your Chanel number is, you know, on the stage and you think, oh,
well,
will
actually,
they use my credit card?
Well, actually, we don't know how heavily they were humiliating them in Mandarin, so we don't
indeed.
Know.
Indeed. But the response of the audience members whose bags were being stolen was very sporting. Like, you know, yeah. the vibe was just like, oh, this again.
Yeah.
This trick. Yeah. So I decided early on that my way to enjoy the show was to just let it wash over me, clap when other people clapped, sort of ritually take part in the experience as if I understood more than I did. And that did increase my understanding or my sort of physical experience of the show.
Yeah.
And it became more and more psychedelic for me, subjectively. And yet then a video came on as part of the performance while they sang The Yellow Submarine in English. And the video was completely 60s psychedelia. Punks, you know, punk meets the 60s.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's good, because that's how I've experienced every single moment of this production. And I feel validated now. I mean, it didn't even end. The show didn't end.
No, I know.
It was so loose.
And it was almost like a cabaret, like an improvised cabaret. Mm. I don't want to put kind of Western performance terms on it, but it, just for the audience's sake, it's sort of a likeness.
Yeah, and you felt that you could go and get a beer and come back and it would still be happening and you'd jump in and get it and that was okay.
Yeah, just that people could leave and come back in.
Yeah.
And, you know? And I was like, oh, well, this is obviously a cultural thing. Like, people can sort of duck in and duck out as they like, or they can arrive late, or there's this kind of, you know, it's almost like a family vibe. I kind of felt like I'd gone to some huge big Mandarin wedding or something like that, you know.
Yeah. And the thing that I have learned from the experience is that here it was really foregrounded that there were language and cultural differences at play. And yet, as you notice rightly about the different audiences for the Melbourne Theatre Company, that's just always true. And it was worthwhile having it literalized so clearly. And the next time that I go to a show, especially at Melbourne Festival, and we will see some more Melbourne Festival shows and talk about them on our next episode, I'll be approaching them in a kind of outsider way.
Right.
Because I reckon that if I don't, I'm lying to myself.
Okay.
Right. When something is from another culture in another language, then the best thing to do, I think, for now, this is a kind of working theory, the best thing to do is just fully embrace your outsider status.
Sure.
And I mean, to me, like you felt, you know, among family, I felt that I had been landed on like an overpriced tour of the suburbs of Beijing. And like they'd given you your rice at 6 o'clock and now it was time for the floor show.
Okay, amazing. You know? I think that outsider status thing is really funny as well, because I just found how I was observing my own behavior. And, you know, there was two girls sitting next to me. that were just constantly on chat on their phone with the brightness really turned down, which is something that I would almost punch someone in the face for. But I never said a word. I'm like, this isn't my space. This isn't my culture. And a lot of people were on their phones. Like, you know, they would take a message, laugh at something they said, go back to their phone. The house lights were up most of the time. So half the people were on their phones. It was a very different experience for me, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you, Julian.
Thank you, Julian. I will be, going to things like this, if only to feel that my friends are cool.
And you by proxy, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's already time for Coming Soon, Carla.
Coming soon.
Let's.
I'm not ready.
Go and see other things immediately.
I still feel like I'm catching up.
Yes. And as we record, we are in the thick of Melbourne Festival. And we, as I said, we'll talk more about some Melbourne Festival shows during our next episode and perhaps sort of check in about the vibe of the festival. There's a new director.
Yes.
What do we think?
Yes, okay.
What do you think, listeners? We'll talk about it. But in November, there is a event run by the Melbourne City Council, Melbourne Music Week. And it seems like basically the coolest thing there is ever.
Yes.
So those listening now might want to check out the Melbourne Music Week website at thatsmelbourne.com.au. And, Opera Australia are putting on the ring cycle again. Hashtag out of ideas.
I don't even know what to say to that, to be perfectly
wrong.
Honest. And how much is it now?
It's just like...
Surely it's gone up.
No, same price.
Oh.
But same price, disgusting. I mean, what's the point of having the Wheel of Family give whatever million they gave? I think it was a million.
Really?
It's so depressing. We have this one philanthropic family that we have to sort of all gag and politely applaud over.
Why, you want more?
Usually there's the Murdochs.
Oh,
there's the Murdochs.
Yes.
Oh, and there's Burnside, the nice lawyer who likes chamber music.
Yes.
But it's so affordable to get into the programs of MSO and Music Aviva and Friends. Really, if you want your name in a brochure, it's affordable in this country. It's cheap.
It can happen,
it's cheap. Yeah. So I saw the ring cycle last time, which was about a day ago. So I'm not really motivated to see the same production. But listeners, if you like, well done Wagner, check it out.
It does not appeal to me in any way, shape or form.
It's got dragons.
You know me, I can't do anything over an hour and a half.
Oh, right. Not for you.
Like
not for you.
17 hours or something.
Are you going to the races?
No. I feel like I really want to get away that weekend. This is the time where you should sort of start planning it.
I get the Monday.
Yeah, we do too. So
I sometimes go to Sydney.
I don't know. I've got to think about it. But right now I'm just sort of trying to acclimatise, as they say.
Yes.
I might go down to the NGV. I haven't been there in a bloody million years.
It's wonderful. Okay, NGV, what's on? At the NGV Australia, I wish I had the name in front of me, but upstairs, scandalously upstairs, because Indigenous art used to be on the ground floor and free and welcoming and wonderful, but now it's sort of been lurched up three floors. Anyway, fabulous Indigenous art is currently on display for free. There is a big set of artworks donated by a family, collected together and displayed together. And a woman artist whose name escapes me has an amazing solo show on the top floor.
Okay.
And Victor and Rolf
will be
coming and opening soon at NGV International.
Do we want to talk about Banksy?
I'm just so not into the blockbusterization of the arts.
I'm not into that word that you just said.
I am. And I want to say it more and think about it a lot.
Let's get rid of Banksy then. I do want to see the Common Ground exhibition that's on at the NGV. I love my modern art.
Oh.
Love it.
But what's that?
So it's kind of, I think it's just, you know, they've, you know, gone through the collection and curated a whole bunch of different pieces that they own into a modern art collection. I'm looking at the pictures now. There's a Patricia Piccinini sculpture. It looks like there's a lot of sculptures in here, which is great. So that's something that I'm really interested. I'm just more interested in going to the NGV. But
we need to do it. I'd say 6 weeks or so should be the NGV rhythm.
Like, to go.
Like, as Melburnians. Like, we do need to.
I don't
to,
think I've been there in 2 years.
No, get back. Get back, really. It's wonderful. And there's a nice energy there now. I'm happy about it.
Other than that, arts festival, not arts. A lot of preparation to do because I found the program completely unappealing. What about you?
Expensive and mostly sold out.
What?
Well, yeah. Heaps of things.
But there's nothing on, so of course it's sold out. It's so small. They must not have much money.
Flames running through the city, Barcelona thing looked a little bit contained.
Okay.
Because it's Melbourne, hashtag safety.
Well, let's see. Let's see how it goes. We are booked in for a few things, but we're not going to see what they are.
And I'm actually really excited about them, so see you next time.
Oh, yes. And then that is that for this month. Thanks for listening. You can contact Philip and I at us@acrossisle.com or on our Facebook page at Across Isle or on our Twitter account, the same, at Across Isle. Shaq West and Mark Barrage are responsible for our contemporary and crisp sound. Thank you to all the artists who put on the shows we have seen this month. Without you, we would be forced to watch HBO.
Ew.
And announcing our monthly newsletter. So a few of you have been receiving it already for possible supporters in our most recent campaign, over $60 pledges. But now you can get it if you missed out on our possible. You can subscribe for $50 a year on our Patreon account. That's in US dollars, which is why it's $50.
Or oh, clever.
$4 a month. I don't want our possible subscribers to feel gypped. Or $4 a month rolling subscription. And our newsletter contains the shows that we're going to see, so you get forewarning at the beginning of each month and when we're going to record and when you can expect the podcast. And you can subscribe at Patreon, www.patreon.com/acrossisle. So thank you again, and we will see you in a month.
Bye.